You're watching the Letterman Podcast with Mike Chizin, endorsed by the Hello Deli.
Yeah! La, 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 la.
Welcome once again to the Letterman Podcast. My name is Mike Chizin. I'm so excited about this episode because it's a member from the community. And from the very beginning, one of the things we've wanted to do with this show is assemble a community of folks, like-minded folks who enjoy this stuff as much as we do, talking about the different perspectives, the memories, and going through some of this amazing, amazing material put out by David Letterman and company. Now, this member of the community is being featured on the show because she's a TV historian. And she has an incredible perspective because she's a millennial. She's a millennial. She's in her early 30s. A gal loves this stuff as much as every diehard fan there is out there. Came to the party differently because she was not even born for a lot of these things that we love so much. And I just appreciate it. Her name is Allison Lips. Real name, not a stage name. Allison Lips. And she has gone and become a historian about all things television. Specialized in certain areas. We get into the stuff that she's specialized in and in her research and things that she's taught. She's taught this stuff at university. It's unbelievable. She's gonna get a PhD. She will be Dr. Lips at some point. Very cool talking to her, but she has a soft spot in what she adores for late night. Conan O'Brien was her gateway into this thing. Also stories of Johnny Carson from her father. And I just really, she and I have gone back and forth many, many times in the background. And I just thought, you know what, it'd be great to have you on the show because your perspective is so different. The whole thing about this, the Letterman Podcast, is to have that transfer of knowledge from the different generations. And we want to be a conduit to transfer the knowledge of what Dave and company did to future generations. Allison is doing that. And I just really appreciate her and her taking time to come and do this and actually put a recorder on to the conversations that we have off camera quite a bit. And I just appreciate her very, very much. So let's get to it, shall we? The Letterman Podcast, proud to present TV historian Allison Lips. Allison, the first question that I have for you, we're going to get into how you got into this, but being a historian and academic who has focused on television, the impact, the history, you're a millennial, you're in your early 30s as we record this, you're a woman. I am fascinated to know your perspective on things. You've taught this stuff at a university level. Let's go right there, and then we'll kind of unravel the whole thing from this point. What have you taught when it comes to television history, and do you love doing it?
Do love doing it. I have taught TV history of the 60s and the 70s. Due to the way that class was formatted, I snuck in a little bit of the 50s and prior to it, because my class wasn't a requirement. So you could skip the 50s in order to get into the 60s and 70s, but TV history builds on each other, which is why it is so important to know what came before. I got into this because growing up, I would listen to my dad tell stories about Johnny, which led me to watch The Tonight Show, because I'm like, The Tonight Show is The Tonight Show. So that means I'm going to watch Jay Leno. By the time I was in middle school, I started figuring out, like, okay, maybe not for me, because I'm a Conan person. So when I discover someone, I'm like, I need to find out what their influences are.
Right.
With Conan led me to Dave, where I'm like, okay, Letterman's still on. I can watch Letterman on Friday nights because school the next day.
Because you're and a middle Letterman school student.
What? I'm sorry. What was that?
Because you're a middle school student at this point, as these revelations are kind of popping in your head. You're young. You're 13 years old, kind of a thing.
Exactly. And I was reading TV Squad, which no longer exists. It was acquired by AOL.
Yep.
So the Kellers, I believe, was their last name. They had a big influence because I was reading their stuff. And I would even comment occasionally on their posts. But yeah, I was in middle school and started watching these shows religiously.
What was your dream job in middle school? I just think this is precious. What was your dream job when you were in middle school?
I wanted to be a journalist when I, because of the 2000 election, fascinated me. And then there were various times when I'm like, I want to be a stand-up comedian. I want to be a broadcast journalist. I want to be a late night talk show host, which I think every late night fanatic is like, that'd be cool.
Yeah, but there's a particular company you wanted to work for that I happen to
Oh,
know that you.
Nielsen?
There you go.
Yes,
Some
I
kids
wanted
want to
to.
be a firefighter. You wanted to work for the Nielsen company.
Yes, because the Nielsen ratings were my sports scores. So some people stay up and see what the spread was last night because they want to see who's going to the Super Bowl. I wanted to know who was in the top 10 in the Nielsen ratings each week because that I found exciting. Obviously, with internet and people watching a million different things, it's less important now. So that's sort of faded because we now measure things differently. But at that time, that was it.
Okay, so you're in middle school, you're for lack of a better term, a TV nerd. You love this stuff, you go down the rabbit hole, you want to know what's going on behind the curtain on the business side of things, but also the cultural significance, that kind of thing leads you to academia, where you basically, if I have it right, you kind of inhaled as much. The journalism was perhaps an application where you can have a real person job, but you tried to inhale as much television studies that were available in university. Is that a fair statement?
I went to university mostly formed, believe it or not, because I grew up watching TV Land and Nick at Night at a time when they showed old shows, whereas now it's a lot of stuff from the 80s and the 90s, even the 2000s, because Nick at Night just shows Friends nowadays. So it was a lot of finding things on my own. I like to say if it wasn't for the internet, I'd be a completely different person because I was watching clips on YouTube. I think it's what DTV is another fan site with a ton of clips. I think I said reading Wikipedia, but reading any news site about TV that I could. So I was familiar with Bill Carter before. Because again, if you're a late night person, the first thing you find out after it's like, okay, the big players are Johnny, David Letterman, Jay Leno, Modern Times, Conan O'Brien. Once you go down that rabbit hole, you're like Steve Allen, and then you're like, okay, but I got to read the late shift. And if you're coming into this now, you have to read the war for late night as well.
Well, and let's get to that part because and I want to get back to some of the stuff because I am fascinated about you teaching this to people at a university level. I'm fascinated about that and where you're going, because at some point you're going to be Dr. Lips. Like, you're going to get a PhD in this stuff. You're right now looking at becoming a PhD. Actually, before we move to 2010, because that's where we're going to really dive into this. And your formative years were late shift two. That was where one of the things that strapped a rocket to this passion that you had was your formative years was during late night two, and you paid attention like crazy. I love your perspective on that. We're going to get to that. But I want to talk a little bit about the university side of things, because I think a lot of folks who do have interests in this, myself included, struggle with perhaps a stigma. I don't know, maybe if stigma is the right word or not, but we don't realize that this stuff actually is taken seriously, in many, many levels. And you have gotten to explore that side of it. I want to talk about, so what university were you at, and what did you teach, in the class? Like, I know you talked about All in the Family, for example. And you talked about All in
Yes.
the Family to a generation that isn't mine or above, it's yours and below. And to me,
Yes.
that is a that's that right there is fascinating. I want to take that and kind of I want to talk to you about how late night as a genre is looked upon differently from the people that you taught versus me, who's a generation older than you. So what university were you at, and how did that happen?
Okay. I Undergrad, I was at Rowan University, which is where I eventually ended up teaching because one of my old professors wanted me to teach his class.
Okay,
So
who's that?
That was David Bianculli.
Okay, and let's do the background of David for everybody else who might not necessarily know. The New York Post's version of Bill Carter, would that be an apt description or not?
Well, he's been with NPR for 20, 30 years or something
Okay.
like that.
Okay.
So more NPR,
Okay.
I would argue.
No, but let's really quickly kind of do his resume a little bit there so people understand who he is. And
And he has a Wikipedia article. It's all there for you to read.
David Bianculli, everybody. Check him out on Wikipedia. That's your that's your gateway into this thing.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Oh, what, his Wikipedia page?
No, we don't need to talk about that. Folks can go off
Okay.
on that. But no, you in the class. I'm super curious.
So I had him for TV History 1 and 2. So TV History 1 is pre-60s. TV History 2 is 60s and 70s. So TV History 1 I had with him and two other professors. That is a class where I would go just for the entertainment, because those three were amazing together. And I would have taken that class as many times as I could. I took TV History 2, that was 60s and 70s. My stronger part is the 50s, if when it comes to TV. But obviously, teaching 60s and 70s, I boned up on that. I'm also a game show fan. So Adam Neidoff is someone who I've been following for a while as well. Of course, that ties into Letterman. I was watching The Riddlers on YouTube in high school.
And
Just being a
what's
Letterman
the
fan.
Riddlers for our viewers who might not necessarily know, what's the Riddlers and how's the connection to Letterman?
It is a game show pilot that David Letterman hosted with a bunch of B-list 70s celebrities. So the type of people you would find on Match Game, and a few who weren't well known enough to make it to Match Game.
And you're watching
And
that in high school. Okay, yeah. Continue.
yes. And that's not a great show. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, the light breaks in the middle of the pilot.
Sounds like a Letterman bit.
Does. I also found Looking for Fun, which I know Don took down because someone requested he did, but it was an HBO special. Very deadpan, very Letterman. So in college, I became the girl who loves Letterman and late night and just has this vast amount of knowledge among my peers. Obviously, Bianculli is like, you know what we're learning in class. Here's your DVDs. Go watch them. Because I was hungry for anything I could. And because I had already known a lot of the TV history that everyone knows, he would give me some of the stuff like the time tunnel. I think it was the time tunnel,
Okay.
where it's just some bad sci-fi show. So that rounded out, you need the good and the bad when it comes to TV history. I also started exploring other countries because I'm like, I know enough about the US. I need to learn about Canada, which we've had some conversations about, Australia, the UK. Letterman fan, very easy to find Harald Schmidt in Germany, which is unfortunate because I don't speak German. And I'm like, I would love this guy if I spoke German. I am learning German, but now it's one of those things like I was finding clips of Letterman in the 80s. Now it's finding clips of Harald Schmidt because he retired.
So let's talk about Harold for a second, because I mean, people who are listening to or watching this show may or may not know who Harold is, and I think that that's a really he's a very curious, interesting footnote when it comes to this stuff. A lot of these huge late show or late night television shows have been parodied, imitated, whatever you want to call it, carbon copied, the similar formula, right down to some of the most, the teeniest details, and then broadcast in their own country as, their presentation. Harold is kind of the herald of that, would he not be? He's kind of the king of the king of the heat.
Love Harold because one, as Letterman has said, he's the guy in Germany who does my show. They literally took his late night set and just transported it to Germany. Then there's also the fact that he has taken bits from Conan and Letterman. And that's why I was laughing because it's such a bizarre thing where you're like, NBC was suing Dave over intellectual property for stupid pet tricks, which they didn't even own. Isn't there something in international copyright law where you can't just steal things without paying for them?
And Harold had a huge run, right?
Yeah, he's well known in Germany. I'm not too familiar with German television, but he'd probably be the equivalent to Dave there.
Yeah, and a long time on the air. I don't know. I should probably look up the to see how many years, but
Yeah, it was multiple shows, but yes.
yeah, absolutely. And then yeah, copied Dave and Conan, and to the point where Conan has done, various bits over the years where he talks about folks who imitate him in various countries and how big
Yes.
he is in different countries, so the genesis of that probably is Harold, I would think.
I think it's taking it to its logical extreme. But we also have to remember that late night TV in its American form is a very American format. So if you look at the British talk shows, like Graham Norton, or even the way James Corden did his, it's everyone comes out and we have a party and get drunk and it's great. So everyone brings their own flavor to the talk show. But because American, specifically United States media, is broadcast all over the world, everyone gets, and I'm in New Jersey, so everyone gets our stuff, whether it's good, whether it's bad. I mean, people think New Jersey is like Jersey Shore, and I'm like, seaside's my local, one of my local beaches. No, we don't like those people. Those people ruin it for everyone else. So television has a huge impact in how people see us, and I think late night television is one of those things where you get to see all of those stars in a different light.
It's and it's has it always been that way? Like when you go back and you think of Johnny and Johnny's earlier shows, like to me, my version of big time show business is different than my father's. Like I look at Johnny Carson, and I always use the example of guys like Frank Sinatra and the biggest stars of the day at that point who would come on, and it was almost like a celebration
Yes.
of the unattainable of, because the internet wasn't there. It was a very different time and place. Would that be used as a vehicle for folks to, get a message out there, change their image, whatever that is back then, as well as the way that is it the same device? Has it always been the same device, or has that evolved over the years?
I think it's always been where people come and onto a talk show and show you a side they want to see you, whether it's participating in a sketch like Betty White and Johnny Carson, Tarzan, or talking about something they wouldn't otherwise, like Hugh Grant on Jay Leno, where Jay famously asked him, like, what the hell were you thinking? So it's always been a platform for celebrities to go and tell us whatever they want us to know, whether it's a different side of them or just maintaining that image, because especially with Steve Allen and Jack Paar, those were at a time when, like, yeah, you had the gossip rags, but everyone had carefully manicured images that they projected to everyone else so that people wouldn't think about. Like, they go home and take a bath like everyone else does. But they don't want you thinking about that. Whereas now, especially with social media, where like everyone's more or less the same when it comes down to it. But there are people who are living more extravagant lifestyles or different jobs, but there's no illusion of, oh, they're like so different from me and glamorous when you can wake up and take a selfie without makeup.
Right. I want to talk more about the evolution of the talk show. I want to get into that. Let's go back to the class for one second here, because the fa the generation gap is fascinating to me. Part of the reason that I'm called, if you want to call it that, to do this is the transfer of knowledge. It's to take the genius stuff that Dave and company did,
There's no
and
off position in the genius switch.
there you go, there you go. And show it to, you know, generations that are coming. And I've talked about this on the show. You know, the genesis of that was, you know, my daughter-in-law, just, you know, sweet little blonde 24-year-old, you know, shows me this piece of comedy. And I'm not going to say who it's from, but it's like a
You're
direct
leaving us
some.
hanging?
Well, I just don't want to, you know, some would call it an homage, some would call it a blatant ripoff. I'm like, you don't understand. Dave did this 20 something years ago. Let me show you. You know, sit her down
Johnny
and show her.
stole from, I mean, Johnny stole from Steve Allen. So it's always been that way. And one of the things that bugged Steve was that Johnny never attributed it to him in a way that Letterman would be like, yeah, this was a Steve Allen bit when it came to like the suit of magnets,
Yep.
because like, or the suit of chips and dip, where like Steve Allen was jumping into vats of Jell-O.
Yep. Yeah, he would say this is I guess this was, I think what Dave would say is, I think this was made, or not, I think this was made popular on the Steve Allen show, like things like this, where he would actually throw that out there. What are some of the things that that Johnny perhaps homaged?
That's being nice, Karnak.
There we go.
That's
Yeah.
the silver bullet when it comes
Yeah.
to
Because
that.
one of his most
Karnak was the
famous bits.
question man.
Yeah. The Question Man. There you go. See, and okay, this is the part where I like talking about this, because maybe some people who are viewing or listening might now go down a rabbit hole and figure some of this out. That's that transfer of knowledge right now. I'm so curious. You're a gal in your early 30s and you're talking about stuff that my dad's dad watched. And that is fascinating to me. Going back to teaching this stuff, the
Right,
generation
but
that has come. Oh, go
Mike,
ahead. Yeah, go, go.
in conversations we've had off camera on the podcast, we've already gone over my interests there. Fountain pens, old TV, history, and vintage guitars. So I'm basically a middle-aged man as it is.
Were you that way when you taught All in the Family to people that were younger than you? That's the one that, so you're in David's class. You now get the opportunity, you know, to start teaching and doing some of these things, you know, and then you go to something like All in the Family, and you're teaching it to a very different generation with a very different set of values. You and I've talked about this. A lot of folks think that that show doesn't age well. And yet that show was, it was one of the, it was a cultural phenomenon when it came out. And even after it had gone off the air, people still talk about it. I'm talking about it with reverence right now. There's a reason that you talked about it in your class. I want to move that over to late night as well, but let's talk about that for a second here. What was it like teaching that? What were people shocked by the content, the language, what was considered a joke at that time? What did people think of Norman Lear and that project?
I actually had to write an essay about that. So that was one of those that we took, let them go home and watch. And some of them watched it with their parents, who obviously were aware of that show. They were surprised. One of them even said, like, my mom was surprised you're allowed to show it. And it's like, it's history. It's the 60s and 70s. I can show whatever I want as long as it's relevant. I mean, I snuck in David Letterman on Johnny Carson just because, you know, What else am I going to do? You invited me
That,
on this podcast. Like, of course that was going to happen.
you wanted you snuck in some of the stuff that you loved. So people were actually shocked that you were allowed to see it. Was there outrage? Was there like, because we see this, this culture that exists now that wants to kind of erase things that have happened. And I'm not certain. I just came back from France recently, and I saw, they got a lot of statues and a lot of paintings and a lot of things that are up that I think if they were available for American consumption, there's a growing number of people who would want them destroyed or erased or whatever. Whereas the French just put a plaque beside it and said exactly what it was depicting, and they let culture kind of judge, if that was deplorable or not. Did you see any of that?
Think media students are different from the general population because we do study history in depth, whether it's history in general or just TV history, and have seen the evolution. Because we also have to talk about Amos and Andy, which a lot of people are like, that's super racist, which it is, but it was also the only show on television for years that had a black cast. So at that time, there was friction between representation and good representation. And at the time, any representation was considered good representation if you're there. Now we're like, oh, could we do something better? But we obviously don't have a time machine.
Well, and these growths that happen, I've got a granddaughter right now, and she's 6 years old, and she gets growing pains, and it's awful because, she's just in agony. And it's just literally her body is just stretching and growing, and that's what it is. And I think that culturally we're in a place where we're taking note of some of those growing pains of the past, though, not necessarily of where we're at right now, perhaps. And it's fascinating to me. I had a person in my life who was I guess I could describe them as an activist. And they were talking about the original Star Trek series, and they were talking about how sexist it is and all of these things. And I said, I looked at them and I said, are you kidding me? I said, Kirk kissed
Uhura.
a woman, a black woman, on screen. Yeah, she was wearing a miniskirt. Don't you understand? Those miniskirts were a middle finger to what these people were being told how they could dress. It was a liberation thing. It wasn't.
Also, Lucille Ball was responsible for Star Trek
There you go.
because it's a Desilu production.
There you go. You think about that, and how rare is it that a woman has that much power in the forward-facing arts at that time? And I mean, there's so it you think about that, just the lens of how you view things, and it's fascinating to me. Let's finally move it over. What was the impact of David Letterman in the talk show world when it comes to history? How did he we so many times people say, oh, Dave changed the game. He deconstructed the talk show and recreated it. You are somebody who has, at the very least, an expert level of opinion on that particular subject, and I'm fascinated to hear your standpoint on it.
I don't think he necessarily changed. He definitely changed the game, but I don't think in the way people tend to state it. He is w probably the most cynical talk show host up to that point. However, a lot of his stuff comes from Steve Allen, which unfortunately we don't have much of his show. But what we do know about it is he was killing an hour and a half of time. So he was doing whatever he could to kill time, which at the time it's like, hey, it's cool you're watching on TV and we're able to do that. Whereas Dave was doing it to subvert the genre because it's like, we could do much better things, but we're just gonna have a monkey, strap a camera to a monkey because we can, which is subversive in the 80s, but in the 50s, something like that. Like the Today Show had J. Fred Muggs,
Okay.
I think was his name,
Okay.
who was monkey, a chimp, a gorilla. No, he wasn't a gorilla. I think he was a chimp, who was David, oh my God, what am I? Well, I'm blanking out on his name.
Okay.
But the first host of the Today Show had a chimp. David Garvey? No.
Okay, you keep going that.
There.
I'll find that. I'll find that while
Yeah.
you keep going.
But he had a chimpanzee as his sidekick. So, yeah. And we're, like the Today Show, what? So there's always been weird things going on at the beginning of TV. It was to be experimental with the. With David Letterman on Late Night, it was because look what we can get away with at this hour.
Right.
So what used to be just throwing anything at the wall to see what sticks became we're throwing everything at the wall because we just don't care.
So it was an
Which,
attitude.
yes.
And
Obviously they cared a lot. If you read anything about Dave, it's like, oh yeah. If that show was not perfect. But the way it looks, which is why it appealed to college students. And even when I was in college, people were still discovering him, whether it was through me or not, because I can talk to friends and they're like, yeah, I've seen some of his 80s stuff. I didn't share them, give them a clip. Okay, cool. Like, let's talk.
By the way, it is shocking to me that you, in your early 30s, can't immediately pull David Garraway, the very first Today Show host, out of your head that quickly. Oh my gosh. Like the fact that you even know that is just astounding to me. The impact that Dave made on television. What do you think David Letterman's greatest impact that he has made, or how did he evolve? What's the greatest evolution, or is it so vast that you can't? Because I mean, Dave had so many phases in his career and what the show
Right.
was. Early on, what do you think was his was the mark that he made that changed everything?
That he was subverting the traditional talk show format. He may have been using old elements, but it was at a time when they weren't necessary because Johnny could do these skits with people, so you don't need to throw things off a five-story building. And it's sort of like the early MTV attitude towards talk show.
Yeah.
So I think that was his biggest contribution because everyone who came after him was influenced by him in some way. Conan has talked about how he was given a list of things to be like, or he, no, he wasn't given a list of things, but they created a list of things because he didn't want to be a Letterman clone. So
Yeah.
they went sillier and wackier, whereas Dave could be silly, but it was always with a detachment,
Yes.
whereas Conan is all in.
Yeah, well, and this here's where we go back to the broadcaster background versus the writer background. And of course, Dave is a phenomenal writer as well, and I think a lot of the time that has been kind of swept under the rug. Where I think I've heard of times where, the Emmy nods are coming, and of course Late Show is being recognized, and the idea of Dave not being included as one of the writers being, it's like, no, of course Dave is a writer, like he's a writer as
Yes.
well, so I don't want to diminish that, but Conan is a straight up writer. Dave's a
Yes.
broadcaster,
Right.
that went down this
Conan
path.
was unknown when he took over Late Night. He was a writer on Saturday Night Live. People knew him from some iconic Simpsons episode, and people were like, who is this guy when he got Late Night?
Yeah.
Letterman people knew because he had already guest hosted The Tonight Show, and we don't really have guest hosts nowadays. I think the closest is whatever the Daily Show is doing on a weekly basis.
Well, Kimmel does it. That's the thing. One of the things I love about Kimmel right now is he's kind of in that phase of his career where he doesn't He gives zero F's now. He's kind of at that place where, you know, he takes the summer off and he brings folks in. I love he, so he does the guest host thing, and it's interesting guest host. It's not necessarily aspiring talk show hosts or up and coming comedians and things like that. It's flat out, you know, Dave Grohl hosted the Halloween episode a couple of years ago,
Oh,
or some of
yeah,
these other,
that is
you know,
right.
he'll bring in you know, celebrities who want to give it a try, which really I don't think is something that was done other than when Dave was off. The Late Show did have, and this is something I want to do an episode on, multiple episodes, because I want to have some of the people who actually, you know, my aspirations are to have Tom Green on here to talk about when he actually got to host Late Show. I mean, that's, you know, I'm going to leave Bill Cosby on the shelf. I'm not going to necessarily go for that one. But, you know, that's something that I think is very, very interesting. What talk shows
Also,
off the
I've
top?
seen Bill Cosby speak. You're not missing much.
Did you see him speak at Rowan?
Yes.
Yeah. What was the, it was a lecture?
It was a Martin Luther King Jr. Day breakfast, and it was a lecture, and he was very angry about a lot of things, and not necessarily in a way you would expect him to be.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you followed him, and obviously, as a white woman, I can't really comment on it. But he's very much a pick yourself up by the bootstraps kind of guy. That's where I'm comfortable leaving it.
Was it funny at all?
No!
Were people upset about that?
No. Think so. I mean, he did autograph some books, but you had to like pay for the book through the Barnes and Noble, and yeah.
Right. He had a thing set up. But anyway, yeah, guest hosts in these talk shows. Was Johnny the first to do that? I mean, Jack Parr sort of did when he walked off, I suppose, but was Johnny the first to have guest hosts?
Ronnie is the first. As far as I know, I do know that Broadway Open House, going even before The Tonight Show, had Jerry Lester and Maury Amsterdam rotating between the two. And then I'm blanking on when it happened, but The Tonight Show, there was a period of time where there was a rotating host. I'm not sure if it was between Steve Allen and Jack Parr or Jack Parr and Johnny Carson,
Right.
where it was like Groucho Marx and a bunch of other people who would like host a week.
Yeah. I enjoyed when I was very saddened when Craig Ferguson left. Craig, I'm a huge admirer of Craig Ferguson, but they did that for a while. They had when Late Late Show was retooling and changing around, they had people who were coming in and hosting that, but that was when Craig was gone, I believe. I believe that's how it went.
Yes.
So that's
And
another
now
thing.
we don't even have a late, late show. It's now after midnight or at, yeah, it's after midnight. It
Yeah,
was at midnight on Comedy Central.
have you watched very many of those? When we had Carter on here, I talked to him a little bit about it. It was very, very new at that point. Have you watched the offering that Taylor is doing?
No, it's one of those things, and we've talked about it. I love late night as a genre. I think it is losing relevance. I don't watch it religiously. Obviously, I watched Conan on The Tonight Show. I watched it yesterday because I don't stay up that late. And that was a huge deal. But I don't stay up and watch late night religiously anymore. I find it more interesting from a historical perspective. I am one of those people who, if something's big, I'll watch it on YouTube the next day. There's only so many hours in the day, and I can't watch all. We got four late night talk shows on broadcast TV. We've got After Midnight. We've got The Daily Show. I'm sure there are talk shows on other places. Last Week Tonight. So, yeah, there's just too many to keep up with, and everything's splintered in a million different ways, which is also something I noticed when I was teaching.
You noticed that when you were teaching. Interesting. Let's talk about that a little bit. Like you, because you were
Yes.
watching it happen real time at that point. Again, Dave, many people saying that Dave is the catalyst
Well,
for
I.
it.
Well, that was when I was in. Wait, okay. So I was teaching in 2020. No, 20. Not fall 2023, maybe?
Okay.
About 2 years ago. And I was finding that to use an example of something, I first had to find out what a given student's reference points were.
Okay.
So for one, it was the nanny of all shows where I'm like, okay, I'm right there with you. Others, they only watched anime, and it's like, I'm not an anime person. So I like we need to figure this out. What is something we've all seen? And I think when you say Dave was the catalyst for this, are you talking about when he moved from NBC to CBS and then everyone could get their talk show if they tried hard enough? Or at least
Yeah,
that's how it seems. I mean,
that's a
now you
great
can
way
get a
of putting it.
microphone, you can have your own late talk, like you can have your own late night talk show on YouTube because it's a format. It's not necessarily tied to the time of day.
You're preaching to the choir, Allison. You're talking to a guy who wouldn't have it if it wasn't for this dilution that happened. But I think more where Dave gets that credit is that Adam Sandler, when he sang his last song for Dave before he left, one of the lines in it is, "You paved the way for every late night show. Both Jimmys should get on their knees and blow you kisses." That was the line. And I know that Dave, when he's approached with this subject, he rebuffs it just like he rebuffs most compliments that he seems to receive. But there's a lot of folks out there who were inspired and thought that they could do it, and at the end of the day, when you think about the drain plug that Dave removed, it's the Tonight Show. The Tonight Show was a dominant force. It was a
Yes.
dominant force, and Dave was the first kind of guy. And I understand that the landscape was changing. Like I understand dilution was happening. With the expansion of channels and cables and cable networks and satellite networks and things like that. But nobody had ever ramparted the Tonight Show and was able to fortify their own fortress. And Dave was the guy who did it. He was the guy who made it happen. And that allowed ABC to go, well, okay, are we going to do something other than Nightline? Dave had his 12:30 show on CBS as well, like of course with bringing Tom over, and that stayed and is still there, not as the Late Late Show anymore, of course, like you mentioned. So I think part of it is also that where there can be something on other than the Tonight Show.
Yes, and I think the entire late shift situation led to that because Johnny wanted Dave as his
Successor.
replacement, as his successor. So that gave Dave legitimacy when he moved over. So there were a lot of people who were like, okay, yeah, that it's the, maybe. It's just like, it's the Tonight Show by a different name kind of thing. Because Dave did kind of lose some of those edges, sand others down, and became the host that 11:35 needed. Not nearly to the point that Leno did. And I was watching a podcast, Blocks, I don't remember the host, with Jay Leno, where he's like, yeah, I had to become that guy. It's a job. Jay's a very blue collar person, and he looks at it that way, which has le which led to the second late shift. So I think that helped Dave get on his feet, and once that happened, You're right. Then the floodgates opened and they gave almost anyone with a talk show, like Chevy Chase, has lasted a few months. Pat Sajak, I don't know why you gave him a talk show.
That was before
Joan
Dave, but
Rivers.
yeah, that was he was Dave's predecessor, which I enjoy, by the way, when Dave would make fun of that. That was CBS's another one of the many attempts that networks would do to counter Johnny. Pat Sajak was considered the golden child at one point, which is just absolutely delightful to think about.
I don't know why you. I actually have a Pat Sajak show mug.
That's excellent. Oh, that is fantastic.
Yes. So I may have Arsenio too. I inherited these from someone when they retired, so.
Oh, that is very, very cool. You talk about, this moment. We're all over the place, but that's okay, because that's kind of what we do here. I want to go back to a moment that you just talked about. In the past 6 months, we have seen two massive moments in late night as a genre history, where we have seen David Letterman come back and guest on Colbert. And we saw just the other night, at the time of this recording, Conan O'Brien came back to The Tonight Show. Now, let's go to 2010 for a second here. This is your formative years. Jason Zinnemann, who wrote Letterman, The Last Giant of Late Night, one of the things he submitted when he was on this show was that folks who were in their formative years, when either of those late shifts kind of happened, whereas I like to say the cement was still wet, they have a bond to this stuff in a different way than other people might. And I really enjoyed that, because it made me think about my reverence for Carter and the late shift and all of that stuff. And I mean, I can't, my copy of the late shift, my original paperback that I have, pages are falling out of it. I've read it so many times. It was like a textbook, a very entertaining one. That was you
We
in
approach this stuff
2010.
very differently because I've read. Do you know how many times I've read The Late Shift?
Tell me,
Once.
one time.
One time.
I highly recommend it, reading it again. It's got some very cool stuff in
Well, I know I read it.
it. But you've
But it's
also read
also
a,
one of.
yeah, go ahead.
I also read The War for Late Night as well, and I read those back to back, so that kind of solidified what everything that went down the first time. And I also knew a lot because I had been studying this until since I was in middle school, but I didn't read The Late Shift until I was already in college.
Oh, that is so fascinating to me. So 2010, Conan, this is another thing that is so interesting to me. I can remember you talk about this moment where Letterman goes and ascends and changes and becomes the Tonight Show. He does what it takes to have the 11:30 show, the big show, and his version of the big show, which to me is just absolutely amazing, because it combines what my dad loved about the Tonight Show with what I love about Letterman, and kind of puts it into one beautiful melting pot. That's what that was to me. But I had a lot of people in my life who have the same exhibit the same behaviors when a band that they love watching, live with 50 people in a room, and they have this nearly religious experience seeing these live shows, and they follow them around from small town to small town, and suddenly that band gets big. Suddenly that band is playing arenas, and people don't necessarily all come along for the ride when it comes to that, as something gets more popular. That happened with Letterman. It happened with Conan as well, while in 2010, Team Coco, emerged and stretched out its wings and went for a fly. You were a massive, massive Conan fan at that point, and you're one of the ones that didn't necessarily enjoy that part of the ride.
So for co more context, I was 18 when Conan took over The Tonight Show. So Jay Leno stepped down the Friday before my birthday. Conan started the day after my 18th birthday.
There we go.
So Conan, it was announced when I was 13, Conan was getting The Tonight Show in 5 years, which is insane. I, in a business where you don't know if you're working tomorrow, I don't know why you would sign a 5-year contract, but it was the allure of the Tonight Show. And while I fully believe Conan was the reason why everything went down, it's sort of like he was digging a hole and everyone else just pushed him in it.
Yeah, oh, that's an interesting idea. Okay, yep.
So yeah, I mean, I'm probably never going to be invited on Conan O'Brien Needs a Fan, but yeah. So that kind of how I was watching it, where I'm like, first of all, Jay was effectively fired from the Tonight Show. If you already know who your successor is, you know, I've been in positions where it's like your boss has your replacement and they're like, can you train them? And it's like, I didn't resign. I was like, no, I'm not training them. Like, you're so it was one of those things where instead Jay's like, I need to protect these jobs. So then he got the Jay Leno show on at 10 o'clock, which was a ridiculous move on NBC's part, because 10 p.m. is usually when you watch your Law and Orders, your ERs, those type of shows. No one wants a talk show at that time. Like, I'm a talk show fan. I would not want to watch a talk show at 10 a.m. I mean 10 p.m. And then there is some validity to Jay's ratings were lower than that hurt the NBC news, local news at 11, and then it hurt Conan's ratings more than they already were. Conan hosted for less than a year. He never had time to find his footing. Had he hosted longer, he might have won some of us back on the train. But instead, things went down in such a way that Conan became this martyr and idol for so many people in my age group, as like how the baby boomers are screwing over millennials. And it's like, both men involved are boomers. Like, what are you talking about? Like, yes, you can argue Conan got screwed, but you need to acknowledge the fact that he's not Gen X, he's not a millennial, he's a boomer. And while I understand everything Conan did, and honestly, if I was in his position, I probably would have made the same move, where it's like, fine, I'm out of here, I'll figure it out later. But at the time, it's like people who were never Conan fans are getting worked up in a frenzy about this. And it's like, I have a hard time talking to some Conan fans now because they only know him from the podcast. Whereas I grew up with late night, I did watch some Conan when he moved to TBS, which I enjoyed, not as much as late night, but again, when you're watching something in your formative years, and I for me, there's something magical about the 12:35 time slot on NBC, where like it attracts a certain type of person, and I'm the person who likes those hosts. I mean, Seth Meyers has gone in a different direction because he came from Weekend Update, and he's not a writer like Letterman and Conan are. Well, he is, but he's a different type of writer, I should say. So he has his deskalogue, which is different from a monologue, and Conan is a very physical comedian, even when he's doing the monologue. So for me, the podcast doesn't do it because I need to see it. And
You want to
I
see
was
those
watching.
gangly limbs doing things.
Yeah, I mean, I could live without the string dance, but yeah.
Let's talk about the okay, so he comes back to the Tonight Show, and I want to talk a little bit and compare a little bit about how each franchise welcomed back their former standard bearer, because I think that they were done completely differently. Letterman's return to Colbert, I think, was a stark contrast to how Conan was brought back on. I was actually very angry at the Tonight Show when I saw how they brought Conan back. Partially, probably because I probably wouldn't have been angry that way. Don't get me wrong, I thought it was fantastic. I thought their exchange was amazing. I just wanted more of it. I wanted them to devote the entire show to Conan the way that Colbert and company devoted the entire show that night to Dave. They didn't do that. But you even talk about this gang, like Conan was, I thought when Conan came back to the Tonight Show, for me personally, I thought for one of the first times, oh, he's a giant. Not physically, although physically they did talk about that, and he did make the set of the Tonight Show look small.
He did, yes.
So there's the physical part too, but actually, I'm like, oh, Conan's that guy. Like he's a giant now. Like he's transcending in similar ways to the way that Johnny did, the way that Dave did as well. I thought, oh, he's huge. He looks huge now compared to perhaps the
But he's
last
also
time.
gained weight.
I don't mean physically. Oh yeah, okay, sure. I don't mean physically. Like I'm saying this
I
guy
know what you
here,
mean.
he's a giant. He's a giant now. Like he and
Right, he
he's
hosted
showing it.
a late night show for 28 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we're including the year he was on the not Legally Prohibited from Television tour, but
Yeah.
still, he was part of the conversation. He got a Twitter account after mocking Twitter, and used that Twitter account to parlay a whole new chapter of his career.
Yeah, because I love because he loved the confines. He loved the confines of being able to execute. Like, there's economy of words, and there's dealing with your stylistic. Like Letterman has a certain style, and how he does. And one of the things about Dave that's so amazing is that his punchlines aren't necessarily punchlines. It's the way it's the Dave delivery, and it's that's why
Yes.
it's so hard to imitate. Conan similarly did that with Twitter because he had these confines. And his jokes were unbelievable on Twitter. That's a great point. It's a really good point. I don't think we talk about that
Yes.
enough.
And I'm one of those people where I like when people are stuck within confines and have to like push against them to get something funny, amusing, groundbreaking, whatever you want to call it, rather than on the internet where it's a free for all.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. And like I said, I'm from New Jersey, my parents are from Brooklyn. Like you cursing a ton doesn't faze me. That's not groundbreaking.
Right.
Like we now know what your favorite words are, but that doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I've talked to some of the writers and I've asked that question, what do you prefer? And I should ask it some more. I should make that a standard question that I ask some of the writers when they come on. What do you prefer? Do you prefer the wide open spaces or do you prefer, the paddock that you have to figure out your best way to kind of that you get released from? And then you have a chute that you have to go down in a pathway with that has a fence that you have to play within those confines. Late night, certainly, Late Night with David Letterman, I should say, certainly had that because they wanted to differentiate it from the Tonight Show. And
Yes.
so, yeah, so, but let's go back to
Yeah,
Conan
because
showing
Jay
up.
was not doing Will It Float.
No. Johnny, you mean Johnny wasn't doing Will It Float?
Well, Johnny or Jay, they
Yeah,
weren't
or,
doing Will It
yeah.
Float.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. They wouldn't do things like that. And Late Show, same thing. Some of these people talk about headlines and how that was small town news. And the moment that other shows start doing some of these things, that's where Letterman and company want to move and try and find something new. Conan, same thing. I mean, the creativity that he has is unparalleled. I think you're right. The output that they had. Oh, go ahead.
Well, he took headlines and small town news and made actual items, which throughout the entire thing, he's like, you can't make this up. And it's like, it's clearly made up. But that's what made late night so great because it's like, can't make it up. Or like with the year 2000,
Yeah.
when the year 2000 was like 10 years ago. And like, that was hilarious. I was so disappointed when they moved to the Tonight Show and made it the year 3000 because I'm like the year 2000 was funnier because like we're predicting the future. That was 10 years ago.
Oh, and it was, and you talk about a long joke, like a joke where you just keep doing the same thing over and over, because I remember when the millennium happened. And okay, now what are they gonna do with it? And they just kept it like it became a new thing at that point in such a like it's genius the way that they would do
Right.
that. And
And
what
then
we're talking about this, go ahead.
Conan's Central Time Zone countdowns for the years were also brilliant. I'm sad that they don't do that anymore because it would just be something weird. And then, like, Max and Conan would either get really drunk or pretend to be really drunk. I'm not really sure what was going on there. But it was always entertaining because it was some weird, like, was it like Oprah and like someone, like giant heads like making out, or like it was just weird things like that, which you couldn't do at any other hour.
Yeah, I really I think that I'm glad that Conan is getting the reverence he does deserve for what he has done. And to me, that was evident when he showed back up on the Tonight Show, even though it was only two segments it was similar in the he was treated, in my opinion, the same as any other guest that's plugging something. Like an
Sure.
A-list, like he was treated like an A-list movie star who was plugging something. Given the two segments, of course, the band did a special theme for him. In this case here, the Conan's NBC theme, which I thought was very, very interesting.
That
That they
excited me.
that did it get you? Yeah, you liked hearing
Did,
that?
but you also tipped me off to it before
Oh, you
I
didn't know that.
watched.
I spoiled that for you. I'm sorry about
Yes, you
that.
did.
I'm sorry about that. But it was cool to hear that. What did you think about Conan and Jimmy talking to each other on the set of that show?
First of all, it was very obvious that Conan was doing what a lot of comedians do when they go on a talk show, where it's they basically do a stand-up routine sitting down and the host is there just to help them get through it.
Okay.
I don't know if that's because Jimmy is famously not great at interviews, which is why his show is so game heavy, but that was what Conan was doing. And then I was reading some of the comments, and I don't listen to every Conan O'Brien podcast, but people were saying, oh, yeah, he told that story on the podcast.
He did.
So I was sad that he didn't say something new. I appreciated it because I know, like, I like his acting out and things like that. But, like, if he's telling stories he told on the podcast, it's like, it really wasn't that big of a deal. He is any other celebrity promoting something. Yeah, it's the Tonight Show. As he said, he hosted it for 10 minutes. But he didn't come back as the host of the Tonight Show. Like, yes, it was kind of promoted like that, but if you actually watch the interview, that was not the purpose of it. The news coverage of it, which we were talking about before, was interesting because I live in the New York metropolitan area. So WNBC, NBC New York is my local station. And the way they were covering it was like their team Coco. They were saying he was fired, he was ousted. And while some element of that is true, I'm like, he quit pretty much. He told NBC, I'm not doing what you're asking me to. I'm going to choose to leave. For him, I mean, it's not one of those like hefty moral questions, but for him, it kind of was when it came to the Tonight Show's legacy. So he felt he had no choice to leave. It wasn't he actually got fired.
Similar to David Letterman, by the way, when he left NBC.
Right. There's a pattern. So I thought that was interesting that the local NBC station was buying into the narrative that has been established that isn't 100% accurate. I think it's easier to process it when it's like, oh yeah, he was fired by NBC because people don't like to deal with nuance. And this is a very nuanced thing where NBC bears most of the blame for the Conan O'Brien fiasco. Conan set it in motion. Jay could have stepped aside and started Jay Leno's Garage years before, which, you know, like Everyone was like, just go work on your cars, create a car show. Everyone will be happy if you do that. So, like, yeah, it's NBC's fault, but no one is blameless.
I like the way you put that. Jerry Seinfeld was one of those who publicly came out and talked about the, Carter mentioned this in War for Late Night, and I, it's been mentioned in other places too, but Jerry came out and said, like, what are you doing talking about this? I think it's the fact that it's the reverence for the Tonight Show, which has been a sticking point for so many people coming along, or along the way, I should say. Dave had this reverence for the Tonight Show. You know, it's not the 11:30 time slot. It's the Tonight Show. And that was really put to the test during Conan's exit, because NBC had come back and said, well, if we could still call it the Tonight Show, we're just going to put it on at 12:05 and all of that. And the idea of this reverence for it. And then you got someone like Seinfeld coming along going, hey, look, you're going to be on TV every single night. Just ride it out. You know, Leno's not going to be there forever. He's quite a bit older than you, all these sorts of things. There's 2 years left on his deal, whatever, you know, just ride it out. And you are, you would be in that camp you know, don't be illusioned by the franchise that is the Tonight Show. Is that accurate? As a Conan fan, not as a historian, I want to be very clear when I say that.
I agree with Conan's actions of leaving the Tonight Show because it, in some ways, you watch the Tonight Show after your local news. You insert Jay Leno in there. The Tonight Show now becomes late night at a half hour earlier. So it's NBC messing with a schedule that every country has their own variation of it, but it's been established by TV conventions since the beginning. And that's why you don't put a talk show in prime time. People don't expect it there. And then you also have the Jay Leno fans who tend to be an older bunch who are like, great, now I get to go to bed early. Which wasn't helping that case. So it's one of those things where I do think Conan was responsible for knocking down like the domino that made everything else fall, but I don't think his decisions after that were wrong. Like he did what he had to do.
And in doing so, became, some would say, you know, even more pop. Like, I remember when the 5-year announcement happened, and I think it was that year or the year before that he had hosted the Emmys. Like, I remember when Conan had this
Yes.
electricity
It
buzz.
was trouble.
And I can certainly remember Dave having that same electricity, that just there was something there. There's a moment. And with Dave, you know, he seized his moment. He left NBC and went and did something bigger. And that 5 years with Conan, I felt, not that the electricity left, because I watched Conan. Like, I would watch Dave and Conan. And my favorite, for me personally, my golden age was Dave, Conan, Craig. And the nice thing about being on the West Coast is my Letterman shows up, you know, at 8:30, because I could time shift, right? And so I would watch Letterman every night, my time around 9:30. I'd have it on the DVR, and that's when I would watch Letterman. And then I would watch one of the 12:30 shows. I would watch either Conan or I would watch Ferguson, you know, kind of real time, and then catch the other one later. That was my golden age
Yeah,
for me.
those drew the same type of crowd. I never really got into Craig Ferguson, but I do appreciate Jeff. So like there are aspects of it I do appreciate, but I was a Conan person and that's who I was going to watch.
Did you like Conan's Tonight Show?
No,
You didn't, hey?
there
You
was
didn't
a
like
too
it?
much Will Ferrell there. Like I'm not a Will Ferrell fan. It was very different. It felt whereas Letterman grew into that time slot and that type of show, with Conan, it felt like they took a lot of things away from him because they weren't appropriate at an earlier hour. So he lost some of that made him special. when he moved to TBS, he got some of it back. But again, intellectual property of NBC. You don't get to take everything. Conan is now on pretty good terms with NBC because all the people who were involved in that fiasco have left. I also think that the Tonight Show fiasco, the war for late night had to happen because if not, we wouldn't have Team Coco. Conan wouldn't have a podcast network that was sold to Sirius for $1 billion. So Conan came out of this better off than he would had he been the host of The Tonight Show, which would have forced him into a very traditional role, whereas Conan isn't a traditional talk show host.
Just like David Letterman in some respects as well. Like, again, that's the similarity that they have.
Right, but Dave had reverence for Johnny.
Yes.
Conan revered Johnny, but I think Dave more because there's the story where he says he hitchhiked to New York and watched the David Letterman show on the daytime before it was canceled. So Conan's base of a talk show was going off of Letterman's. So of course it was starting from something slightly askew.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Emmy nominated David Letterman show, by the way, and there's the Emmy package that went out to for one of the Emmys for that they were nominated for after cancellation, which is kind of interesting. Bill Shortridge sent us that. Shout out to Bill.
Jeez.
I know it's pretty. I love having
You
that. I
see
can't
that?
believe
The
we
late
have
night
that.
book, your worldwide pants jackets. I'm just like, oh, like I want a worldwide pants jacket so bad.
Oh, well, we'll see. Well, it's. I know people who know people. We'll see what we can perhaps do to make that happen. I could. You
That
and I
was part
could.
of the reason why I wanted to be an intern. So I'm like, that jacket.
It's like you've done this before. Okay, so I knew what I was going to finish with, and I knew it was going to be about the internship, you applying for that. I do want to stop this, our first. I love that you and I are connected. I'm so grateful that we did get connected and that we can spend hours and hours and hours talking about this stuff on the phone. This is our first time doing it on camera. I'm enjoying it very much. I hope you are too. Now,
I
let's
am.
talk
I love
about.
this.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that, Allison. So let's figure this out because you're finding your way in the world, figuring out how you can merge the idea of a career and what you love and what you're now an accredited expert at. You are a legitimate TV historian that's just figuring out what the next step is. You've done some podcasting. You've done some things where figuring out what how you can execute this as best as you possibly can.
Right.
Where are
I
ways that
don't
people
think
can
we
find you?
touched on, hold on.
Yeah.
I don't think we touched on my background completely. So I have my bachelor's from Rowan in journalism and radio, TV, film, my master's in business from Rutgers University. I did apply to PhD programs, but instead I decided to go back to Rowan. And in the fall, I'm starting an MA in television studies.
Okay. So Dr. Lips is still a little bit further down the line.
Yes.
And that is not a stage name. Lips is the last name, and I cannot wait for the time that I can call you Dr. Lips. That's going to be amazing.
I still think like if I only went into medicine, I could be like a plastic surgeon and that would be my specialty. And like it just writes itself. I mean,
It
my like it would be plastic surgeon or porn star. Like those would be my options if I
does.
really took the last name as like there's like literally a thing like Sally Ride was an astronaut. Like yeah, where your last name tells you what you did.
I'm a gigantic Los Angeles Kings fan, and the year that we won the Stanley Cup, Jonathan Quick was our goaltender. I adore that very, very much, you know. Okay, so you've done some podcasting. You've gone into this world a little bit. What are some of the things that you have done? What are some of the aspirations you potentially have? How can people find you? That's another thing too, is you're a fascinating to get the perspective of, and again, are nothing short of an expert. Same like Adam Neideff, when it comes to game shows, you are certainly that when it comes to television history, and I appreciate that about you. What are some ways that people can find you?
As a recovering digital marketer, kind of I wouldn't say embarrassing because it's setting boundaries, but it's a little odd where you can find me at a Michelle. No, that's my email. I mean, you can email me, but my Twitter account is at Allison M Lips, which I don't update that ever unless I have a Pop Break article
Yep.
going out, which is thepopbreak.com. I recently interviewed Hannah Forcier, who is a lifestyle content creator. These at Pop Break, I am the digital trends editor, so I follow what goes on online, which again, I have to choose. So that's why late night takes the back burner. And like you said, I'm a historian, so I pay attention to what's going on now, but I'm really diving deep into the history and seeing how were people reacting to things at that time and how are they perceived now.
So, what do you want to do?
I want to teach at the university, which is why I'm getting a PhD, but there's no money in that. I'm aware that's a huge investment, both time and money, and there's no money in that. What I would love to do is do more like podcasting, writing about television history in a way where it makes it relevant to people who aren't obsessed with this type of stuff. One of the things that I've noticed is there is a huge lack of media literacy, especially in the United States. And with Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, it's a cliche, but the algorithms put you in a bubble and feed you what you want. So that is why my feed on Facebook is cat photos and videos. The alt.letterman group, which predates me, which
Literally.
literally, yeah, it was former Usenet group, which I knew it was a Usenet group before it shifted to Facebook, which again, one of those like weird things that I know because I got into this at a very young age and the internet was there and I used it. My dad was a computer programmer. So I was on the computer from the age of three. And like as an 8-year-old, I was looking up like jokes on AOL. So child appropriate jokes, some Bob Hope, Milton Berle slip through. So that's also an introduction because of all the little things, and I was paying attention. And I would like to either write a book like Adam Neudeff does, start a podcast similar to this, because I have done Pop Break Goes to Washington, which was about political movies and what their impact was and how they are perceived now with the benefit of hindsight. I've also done a few guest spots on the Anniversary Brothers podcast. If you're interested in HBO, The Magic School Bus. Was it The Magic School Bus? No, I think we talked about The Magic School Bus. Definitely. Okay. Wow. No, it was Bill Nye the Science Guy, another
Oh, right
PBS
on.
show I grew up watching. Match Game. Because late night and game shows and children's television are my three main areas. I love sitcoms, dramas. I'm not as strong. But again, late night, not a hard thing with sitcoms. Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman's been on my to watch list forever. I finally got those DVDs. So yeah, you can find me at the Pop Break. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, if you want me to write for you, you want to hook up that way. Find me at LinkedIn, Allison Lips, the one who went to Rowan and Rutgers, that's me. You know,
Hold on. There's another Allison Lips.
there are multiple Allison Lipses.
Well, there you go. All right.
There's another one who spells it like me. We have a different middle name, and then there's one with two P's. in their last name.
Okay, well, there it is. And let's finish off by talking about, you know, you obsessed with, you started with Conan. Conan might have been your gateway drug, but then you shifted over to Letterman, in many respects. It's safe to say that that's the case, right?
Say both of them, but yeah,
Okay.
Letterman in many respects. And I think part of that was because I discovered Conan when I was 10.
Yeah.
And then my parents put it on because they were sick of Nickelodeon. And the late night with Conan O'Brien show was in many ways very similar to Nickelodeon at that time,
Yep.
but with more adult jokes, obviously.
Sure.
So my parents put it on when it was rerunning on Comedy Central because they were sick of me watching Nickelodeon. And they're like, this is Conan O'Brien. She might like it. They didn't know I had already been watching him for like 6 months.
They were on CNBC. He was on CNBC as well, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Okay. So then you went and you took your shot, and I just want to ask you about that because I'm fascinated with the interns. You know, we did our intern summer series last year in the Letterman podcast. I've got a few interns lined up that are going to come on the show. You went and took your shot. You didn't make it, but you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. You at least took your shot. You
Yes.
tried and you had the interview, right? Talk about your wanting to
So
become a Letterman intern.
I applied to be an intern. I made it to the top 50, but they're like, we've decided not to interview you. Try again next year.
Yep.
But that was between my junior and senior year. So next year would have been a after I graduated, which I knew someone who did that, but they weren't allowing that anymore. So that meant I had to go apply to the Page program, which
Right.
I had a friend of a friend got me in. I had that interview and I completely bombed it. I showed up way too early. I am such a fan, as you can tell, but trying to play it cool, it sounded like I had never seen an episode of Late Night of The Late Show before, when in fact I had seen a good chunk of Late Night, years of The Late Show.
Yep.
But there are things when you're applying for a job, you don't tell people. Like, I had school projects that I used Letterman as a basis of, and things like that, where I'm like, no, that doesn't sound normal. So I was just very much like, yeah, I'm a huge Dave fan. And I believe it was Janine was like, so have you
Janice,
seen the show live?
Janice, you ruined
Janice, I'm
Janice.
sorry,
Yeah,
Janice.
don't be. I just, yeah.
Yeah, Janice, who is like, oh, so have you seen the show live? And I'm like, no, unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to. I think I explained the situation. It was one of those things where it was just never meant to be.
Yeah.
So like I walked out knowing like this was not good. Like I felt so bad because I felt like I let the person who got me the interview down, because try I played made I played it so cool where I came off as detached. Also,
Right.
you don't show up like an hour and a half early to an interview. You just don't.
Yep.
But I was commuting from New Jersey into New York, and traffic could be no traffic. It's an hour and a half. Traffic, I've already taken 3 hours to get into the city.
Yep. Well, just ask Jerry Mulligan about that. He'll tell you some stories about getting to the commute from Jersey to the show. You were also telling me that day there was a weird mood on the place.
Yeah, I like stopped into the Hello Deli and got a cinnamon bun or a honey bun or something, and like Rupert seemed like he was having a bad day. Okay. And then I went up super early because I didn't know what else to do. And then I'm like sitting, and then I see Alan Ted talking to someone. And Alan wasn't having a good day either.
A rare bad day for Alan Coulter.
Yeah, so I'm just like, okay. I get like it was definitely just not meant to be.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with because I don't know what would have happened. Like that could have completely destroyed my like love for the show. Because I know the interns work long hours. the pages got paid like $10 an hour at that time. So half my money would have been going to the bus
The
to get
commute.
into the city.
Yep.
And it was just not meant to be. I didn't end up working in production. I'm more of a writer, historian. My day job is data analysis for an advertising company, which again goes back to Nielsen. I'm one of those people who was very fortunate to have an idea of what they wanted to do when they were younger, but things took me to like different aspects of it. So if you look at my resume, you have to like piece together how it makes sense, which it does once you talk to me. But if you look at it, you're like, you've done so many different things.
Yeah, but they all feed our pieces to the puzzle that feed, like you said, it captivated me when you told me that your dream job was good to be at Nielsen, at the Nielsen rate. Like that to me is so, and so to me, yeah, so going to marketing, like to me that makes sense, or digital marketing I should say, that there's a through line there as to how you can somehow, some way take a kernel of your passion and turn it into something that you can monetize or whatever. I see things for you though, just because of your perspective, because of your deep knowledge that you have for this stuff. And I mean, you have done such a good job today of kind of scratching the surface compared to where your mind can go, because you go deep. And I appreciate that about you, how deep and rich you know this stuff. And I'm kind of in awe of it, because you have seen it from not just an academic standpoint, but also because you have passion for this stuff at your age. It's phenomenal, and I'm really grateful that you're around, because when some of us older folks are gone, you're going to be the one that's still around remembering this stuff, and having you have the same desire that I do, that you want to transfer this knowledge. So I'm glad that you're walking around on the planet, Allison, and I love talking to you. I love
Thank
our
you.
rapport.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, this has been a lot of fun. I'll do a really quick outro, and then we'll say our goodbye privately, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
All right, I appreciate that. There we go. And I just want to say, since this the Letterman podcast has began, it has been so much fun with the folks who have reached out and love to go deep on this stuff with me. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of you that I've done this with, where we just, we'll go off and go back and forth on some of this stuff, and talk about the impact that this has made on our lives. It's a lot of fun. One of the things that we wanted to say unabashedly from the very beginning was we wanted to build a community. And it's really cool watching the evolution of that community. My friendship with Allison being one of those things, and seeing what she's doing. Adam Nediff, same thing. I just appreciate the folks out there who are so thoughtful about this stuff and want to also translate this history and transfer it to other people. It's a lot of fun. The Hello, or the Letterman podcast, has one sponsor only. That is hello-deli.com. Rupert G may not own the Hello Deli anymore, but hello-deli.com is still running strong. Get yourself a Late Show with David Letterman mug. Get yourself a Late Show with David Letterman hat, shirt, whatever it is. Go to hello-deli.com and get you or a family member or a friend a piece of Late Show with David Letterman merchandise. This has been another episode of the Letterman Podcast with Mike Chisholm. Coincidentally, I am Mike Chisholm. Thank you and good night.